Hello and welcome to the Spirit Guide Society podcast. My name is Pedro Shanahan and I'm your spirit guide.
Tonight at the Mezcal Collective at Las Perlas in downtown Los Angeles, we had our very good friend here, Vinny Mauger with Maestro Dovel. Cheers to you, Vinny, and Bambi, my co-host here. What did we taste through tonight?
Well, we went through the whole lineage of Maestro Dovel tequilas. Very interesting expressions, some of the innovative expressions that we have out right now. We went from our Blanco to our Reposado to our Añejo to our double filtered aged tequila and to our smoked silver.
It was beautiful stuff. Guys, make sure to listen to our podcast, SpiritGuideSocietyPodcast.com. Subscribe on YouTube. We do put out awesome videos regarding these tastings as well. And always remember to enjoy the podcast responsibly. That means don't get too drunk at your next quinceañera and forget to congratulate the quinceañera girl, okay? Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Salud, everybody. Thank you.
Salud. How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
So this is actually the second time we're going to be doing this tasting, but the first time we had it around, we didn't have the podcast going quite yet. We weren't prepared, but today we are. And I'm really excited because we're not tasting through four marks tonight. We're actually tasting through five. So we're really going to dive deep into some tequila education today, and we're really excited for it. Vinny, can you just give us a little bit of background on yourself and how you kind of got into the industry?
Yep. So I actually first started working in the hospitality industry as a dishwasher, and that was 12 years ago. From there, I worked myself into prep kitchen, making pizza. Eventually enough, I started looking at busboys, barbacks, all that kind of stuff. Started getting into it, started busing tables. Next thing I know, I'm serving tables, making my own tips. The industry really took me, and I felt like I was part of a family every time I was working at a restaurant or a bar. From that, I really developed a passion for spirits, drinks, cocktails, beer, all that stuff, and ended up becoming a bartender. Bar back for a little bit to really learn the ins and outs of all the, you know, the hardware and all that stuff, very important. And then started bartending, kept on learning more, kept on reading about it. And the one place that really solidified me as a strong member of the industry was this one bar back in Venice Beach, which was a whiskey bar. And had a vast array of different whiskeys that we were tasting and always learning about. And I came up with the idea of starting a whiskey society over there, actually inspired by Stephanie and Pedro from Seven Grand.
Yeah, you know, you started coming to the tastings, I want to say, at least 2 to 3 years ago. So you're
That's right.
And then you and Joel, who were bartenders over at Townhouse, were also members at the bar. You guys still
That's
have
correct.
A bottle over there.
That's
so
right.
It's always great to kind of have that come full circle. You know, it's just like the moment that you sat down at the bar Jackalope, it just kind of, it was a domino effect. And it's just like really exciting to see that we inspire people that way and that you were able to perpetuate this beautiful education that we like to give to people. Every single week.
Yeah, that's beautiful, and I'm very thankful for you guys to inspire us like that. Yeah.
Awesome. So now that we have a little intro about you, why don't you just dive in to the history of Maestro Dovel and how that kind of company came about?
I like talking a little bit about agave spirits in general first.
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
Give a quick intro. I know a lot of you guys have already a lot of knowledge on the spirit, but it's good to touch on it, especially for the podcast. The most important thing about the agave plant is that it has a sugary core. So in the core of this huge plant that grows in the desert and it's hard and harsh, has sugar in it, there's sugar in it. And that's where things start. That sugar can be used to be fermented into this agave kind of beer. And then after you get this beer, you can distill that into a spirit, tequila or mezcal. So that's my little bit of introduction about agave and, you know, how it actually became tequila.
Pardon the interruption there, Vinny, but what's the nickname? Is there a nickname for that part of the actual plant itself? Is there a nickname?
Yeah, we call it the heart of the plant. And in Spanish, they refer to it as the piña. After you cut all the leaves out of the agave plant and you actually just working with the core of it, it looks kind of like a pineapple. So they call it the piña of the agave, or the core, or the heart of it. And that's where all the sugars live. One other interesting fact about agave plant, we not only can make a beer out of it and then distill it into a tequila or mezcal, it can also be consumed as a food. And the interesting fact about it is that the agave plant is the first regularly consumed food staple of humanity. Before we domesticated grain around 10,000 years ago, we were already regularly consuming agaves 13,000 years ago. These guys came across these plants after they were the native people of Central America in the area. They would do control fires on the bushes to try to trap game. And in this process, they would burn a lot of agave plants because they're growing everywhere. And they would be like, oh, this real hard plant goes into a real soft kind of sugary plant after you cook it. And that's kind of how the whole process of making tequila works. You got to get this plant that has sugars in the inside of the core, but those sugars are not in sugar form yet, basically. They're in a form of inulin, which is kind of a starch. That's why you gotta kind of cook it. Not kind of cook. You gotta cook it to hydrolyze those molecules into fermentable sugars, and that's how the whole process starts. You gotta cook the agave plant. It goes from this real hard, fibrous, almost wood-like kind of composition into a soft, sweet, kind of sugarcane-looking thing. After you cook it, you gotta crush it. Get the juices out of it. Mix it with some water. Let the wild yeast in the air ferment it. Fermentation process works in a way where basically the yeast, which is a little microorganism, eats the sugar, the molecule of sugar, and then shits out basically.
Well, pisses out ethanol and farts out CO2.
That's exactly right. Pisses out
it's
ethanol,
science.
Farts out
yeast. We're science. If you do it, yeast does it as well. I always like to say that yeast functions a lot like humans do. They have life cycles that are very similar to us. So, like, think about who you were when you were 13 years old and what kind of music you listened to and the kind of clothes that you wore and makeup you had on or whatever. And then think of who you were, how you progressed to 18 years and then 20 and then who you are now. The longer you let that yeast live, it'll keep reinventing itself and reinventing its flavors. So I'm sure we'll touch on the fermentation process when we dive in.
Yes. You're right.
To the tequila.
I just had a quick question for you, Vinny, real quick, just so everybody else can understand. What are some other ways of mashing or breaking down the agaves? What are some traditional ways in Mexico that they do this?
Ben, traditionally, I don't know which one would be the oldest style, but I feel like the most common traditional style of crushing the agave piñas after they're cooked would be by tajon stone, powered by a donkey or a mule. So mezcal makers in Oaxaca is still pretty much solely work with that kind of process.
So what is a tajona, just for people
tajona
out there that don't
is a stone that has a specific kind of like composition to it, mineral
circular
composition to it, that impacts on the flavor of the agave, as well when you crush it. So instead of crushing with a mechanical mill, let's say, which is commonly used by tequila makers nowadays, you use this tajona stone, which lives some of the things that are in this tajona stone onto the agave plant that later on gets fermented and distilled, and you can still taste the rustic aspect of the process because
kind of
it was in contact.
Like limestone water does to whiskey, this tajon does to a little bit to the agave, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How the limestone water in Kentucky strips out all the heavy metals from the water. Similar process. The contact with this specific tajon stone affects the flavor of the final product that you're going to have. But mechanically crushed agaves is very commonly used for tequila making nowadays. And they have this other process where they literally just hammer down the agave piñas with a wooden hammer onto a trunk, which is a very hard process to do, but some mezcal makers still use it too, because again, the wood is going to inflict on the flavor of it as well.
Cool.
So enough about crushing, fermentation, everything.
Let's talk about Maestro de Bell. I'm really excited.
So Maestro de Bell is a very unique brand of line of tequila, I would say. I feel like the two important things to remember about Maestro de Bell, which I like pointing out to people, is that we use 100% lowland agave. So Maestro de Bell is made in tequila. The town of Tequila, which is in Jalisco, about an hour and a half from Guadalajara, that's where you fly into, then take a train to Tequila. This town is basically lives off of tequila making. There's a few different big brands that work there and big houses of tequila. And it was actually formed around the tequila making. Tequila, as an interesting fact as well, comes from an indigenous word that means place of work. Because tequila is right next to the volcano, there's a lot of volcanic, real sharp volcanic rocks that grows there, and the agave plant also likes the volcanic soil to grow on. So there's a lot of agave plants which they use not only to eat but to make fiber out of, and use the spikes to be able to stitch things up. So they will go over there, use these volcanic rocks which are real sharp, to be able to work on things. So that place, kind of, you know, where you work and where you're going, you end up forming a community. All of a sudden it is a town.
So is that, like, would you say, you were mentioning the volcanic, is that the main characteristic of a lowland agave? Is that what really separates it from anything else? Or
yeah,
what's the taste or the difference there between like a highland agave or a lowland agave that you guys are using?
The lowland agave, which is what we use, grows on the volcanic soil. Mm. The volcanic soil works in a way where it retains the heat from the sun during the day and then releases it at night. So these agave plants, they are in the valley, which is what we call the lowlands. They're getting a lot of heat during the day. They're kind of trapped in there. So they prefer to process the sugars during a cooler time, knowing that they're going to have enough heat during the night. That's when they do it. Mm. And the fact that they have this reverse process affects the taste of it, gives you a more herbaceous, peppery, kind of vegetal forward tequila. The agaves that grow in the highlands, they are more in contact with breeze, and they are cool off. They cooler during the day, so they can process the sugars throughout the day. And the soil that they grow in is this soil rich in ionite. It's red in color, so it gives you a lighter, more floral tequila. People like saying that the highland agave tequilas are more feminine, and the lowland agave tequilas are more masculine.
That's funny. It's kind of the opposite thing. And in Japanese whiskey, their masculine is in the north, and their feminine is in the south.
It's interesting how that works, huh? So, touching on light lowland versus lowland versus highland agave, I think it's important to remember, people, that we are talking about one specific species of agave. By regulation, tequila has to be made out of the blue Weber species of agave. There's many different species of agave. There has been 250 different cataloged species of agave plants that grow, that we found between Central America, South America, and Caribbean islands. And there's over maybe 50 that have been used to make mezcal, racia, different things. But when you're talking about tequila, the law doesn't only regulate where it's made, it also regulates the species of agave. So we're talking about blue Weber agave, the same type of agave growing two different soils. It's going to give a different taste. Maestro Dobel is 100% lowland. So you're looking at this herbaceous, peppery kind of tequila. And the other interesting thing about Maestro Dobel is that we use 100% virgin barrels for our maturation process.
Interesting. So you're not buying it from any other distillery. Okay. So let's go ahead and dive into this first one right here. So this is going to be 100% lowland agave. Is this the Maestro Dobel Blanco or silver? What do you call it?
Blanca? Maestro Dobel Silver.
Silver.
Or Blanco.
Or Blanco.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Depends where you're at. If you're in Mexico, Blanco. If you're here, silver.
So go ahead and stick your nose in that glass and breathe in gently through your mouth. And what kind of food words are you getting for this first tequila here? I'm getting something actually like a little funky, a little bit cheesy. I'd say like almost like brie. And it's like very rare.
I'm getting like Parmesan with jicama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting something
Parmesan
weird.
Sure.
Yeah.
Some Parmesan cheese.
There's also some fruitiness in there, but maybe more.
Almost like a papaya.
Like pineapple in this.
You getting pineapple on the nose?
I get pineapple and even more specific, pineapple skin.
Yeah. Jay, what are you getting?
A little bit of pepperiness, like a little bit of white pepper as well.
On the nose?
So go ahead and take a sip and see how that flavor changes for you. I'm getting like leathered candy strips, like you know the kind of ones that you used to get when you were a kid at lunchtime. Watermelon flavor, that's what you get.
I find Maestro Dobel remarkably sweet.
Yeah.
There's three specific things in our production process that we use that kind of sets us apart from the other tequilas that are made in the same distillery. That is designed to make the tequila a little sweeter, higher sugar content basically. We use very ripe agaves. We do a minimum 9 years because you can harvest them. A 7 years old blue Weber agave can be already mature enough for you to harvest and make it into tequila. Some other tequila makers use unripe agaves just to throw in and use higher volume. In our case, we use only minimum nine years old agave up to 12. After that, they're probably going to be sprouting already.
Yeah.
So use real mature agaves. Not only that, when we cut our agave piñas, when we're talking about stripping it down to its core, we do the jicama cut. They call the jicama cup, which you try to get rid of most of the green that sticks out of it, which gives the appearance of a pineapple. Yeah. You want some of the green, so we do keep some of it. The stringency of the greenness.
Of the fronds on the outside.
Of the fronds, yes, exactly. But we do a jicama cup, which is real close to the core, real focusing on the sugary core of the plant. And then the third thing about it is that we cook it for a little bit longer at a lower temperature. So this steam cooking ovens that we use to cook all the peanuts as well, we cook it for a little bit longer for Maestro Dobel. So our Blanco would be already pretty sweet, but the vegetal aspect of the lowland agave really gives you some brightness, really gives you some pineapple fruitiness.
The pepperiness. Nose on it is all terroir, and then you definitely get that sugary sweetness on the palate for sure. It's one of my favorite things when it comes to drinking any kind of spirit, where the way that it smells doesn't match the way that it tastes. It's always really exciting to get stuff like that and let yourself be surprised about things that way too.
It's absolutely delicious, but just real quick, Vinny, I have a question. So before we get into actual distillation, when it comes to fermentation, how is your guys' process? Is it open air, closed air? What is the style of Maestro Dobel?
We're looking at a controlled fermentation process. So Maestro Dobel, I'll say, is a mix of traditionalism and modernism. The way we cook it's traditional. Brick clay ovens, cook for 2.5 to 3 days at a lower temperature. And then our crushing process, for example, is already mechanized. Okay. So we use a mechanical meal. There's no contact with tahone stone. So you got that cleaner kind
there's
of taste.
No little, there's no little burrito or mule.
No little master. Burritos, man. They might be doing some other type of work or just hanging out at the hacienda, but they're not crushing any agave. And then when talking about the fermentation process, we're also looking at a controlled fermentation process. We use two different types of domesticated yeast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The agave yeast, the tequila yeast that they call, which already grows on the agave plant. And then a second one, that is a secret. They don't really release. They don't let us know.
Okay. Could that's be a okay. That's very common. That's very, very common that people don't want to share that precious information.
And it's interesting when you talk about the fermentation process, control versus just exposed open tank vats. You have more control over the final flavor of your tequila or whatever spirit that you're making. When you just leave it up to the elements, you add a little bit of
risk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Risk.
It's gonna taste different. Not necessarily bad. The terroir is the same. The stuff that lives in there gonna be pretty much the same, but still it's gonna affect it.
Right. Because the main thing you're looking for is consistency for these tequilas and for these kinds of brands is to like have that same kind of flavor profile that stays over time through different seasons and through different maturations, correct?
Yep.
Awesome.
So if I wanted to buy a bottle of this Maestro Dobel silver for my home bar, how much would that run me at my local liquor store?
You're looking at $39.99.
Not bad at all.
Some people can market it as a little bit higher. So $45, $49 even, it's not uncommon. But I feel like $39 is the standard price for Blanco. And then, yeah, that's
okay.
How much it costs.
So we're going to go ahead and move on to the second mark here. What's the second mark that we just passed out?
I believe it's the Reposado.
Reposado.
The Reposado. So you had already mentioned earlier that you're using barrels that are virgin. Which is always a fun topic to talk on because typically those reposados and those añejos are using ex-bourbon barrels sourced from America because they're wanting to extract some of that sugar. So I'm kind of playing, you know, I'm trying to connect the dots here, and I'm assuming that you don't want to extract that certain flavor from the wood, so you're using virgin oak instead and maybe leading more towards to extracting the tannic flavors out of it instead of the sweet. Am I on the head there? Maybe?
I feel like because we do... We not only use virgin barrels, we also do a heavy char on it.
Oh, so you do a char. Okay, but
so
they're
we
not.
Do a char.
Okay, so it's new charred American oak.
New charred American,
okay.
American oak.
So there's been no rested spirit before it, correct?
No rested spirit.
Okay.
But there's a lot of caramelized wood.
Yeah, okay.
So you do get tannins, but because we're looking at a level 3 out of 5, mm-hmm. you do also get a lot of caramel.
Yeah, that's
but
absolutely right.
There's a pleasant tannic forwardness to the finish of it that helps rounding it up instead of tasting too sweet. So I'm actually curious to see what you guys think. The Reposado is a 6-month-old American virgin oak barrel, level 3 char, aged in Mexico.
So go ahead and stick your nose in that glass and breathe in gently through your mouth. What are you guys getting on this Reposado? I feel like a lot of that original funkiness that I got from the Blanco is not there anymore. It's definitely mellowed out with some time in the barrel.
Yeah, you start picking up caramel and vanilla, I feel like.
Caramel and vanilla, but something a little bit lighter. I'd get butterscotch.
Yeah, definitely.
Oak spices a little bit too.
Yeah. A little bit of marzipan.
With that pepperiness.
Now go ahead and tap some over your tongue. Such a clean, beautiful finish. That's like a breakfast reposado, if you ask me.
Yeah. Like a maple spice almost. It's like
I'd put that in some café con leche, that's for sure. So where are you getting these barrels from? Are you already receiving them charred, or are you charring them on location on the premise, or you're working with a cooperage somewhere else?
We get our barrels from two different places in America. It's American virgin oak. We get it from Colorado and Indiana.
Okay.
So there's two different cooperages that we source it from. It depends on availability, mm-hmm. and we char it in Mexico.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah. Awesome.
They have they do actually a very simple process. They don't have the big flame. They just put little fires inside the barrels and they char them like that.
Classic.
I just want to, sorry, pardon my interruption. I just want to go back to everybody and see what they got here on some feedback. So what do you get with the spirit?
I got salted caramel on that.
Salted mm-hmm. caramel? Drew, what did you get?
No comment.
No comment. Jay?
No comment.
Classic barrel flavors, like a lot of caramel, like you guys were saying, like bacon spices, a lot of vanilla. Really fresh, vibrant kind of holiday spice for sure.
Absolutely.
So if I wanted to buy a bottle of this for my home bar, this Reposado, how much would that cost me?
That is more towards 45.
More towards 45.
49 maybe.
Okay. And the fermentation process that you guys have, how long is it? I think, I'm sorry if you said it already and I missed it.
We ferment it for 2 days.
For 2 days. Okay.
What kind of fermentation tanks do you have?
We use huge stainless steel tanks and they are covered, so they're not in contact with anything else. Yeah, very controlled. I saw them. It's huge.
And you said you use two domesticated yeast strains for that.
Two different
correct?
Strains: the tequila classic strain of yeast, and then a second one that is, you know, they use champagne
yeah.
strains,
mm-hmm.
different things.
Absolutely. What's your output looking like right now? Like, how much are you guys producing per year? Would you say? And what are you guys putting the most?
It's not that huge.
Yeah, it's not. It's kind of like it's a smaller release.
We actually used to be all about that at the beginning.
Okay.
But we try to keep up production because the demand has been growing.
That's great. That's all that you can really hope for is that demand continues to grow. So Andrew just came around and passed out this third whiskey here. This is the Añejo?
Añejo.
So we're really going to see how the virgin American oak barrel really takes over the tequila. This one is a tequila that is going to be more towards a whiskey drinker tequila. Going to get a lot of barrel. We're looking at 18 months versus 6 months.
And is it the same two barrels that you had before between either Colorado or Vienna?
Yeah.
And so do you switch the barrels? Do you actually like blend them to taste?
No.
What's your process?
We this is not a single barrel, so it comes from a batch. But they don't have a specificness of like which barrels are we using from where. So
okay.
It can be either from Indiana or it can be from Colorado. They just use them.
Awesome.
But they are both American white oak.
American White Oak. You said 18 months for the Añejo, correct?
18 months.
So you're just letting it sit a little bit longer, right? You put down some barrels, you pull some at 6, and then the other is at 18.
Exactly.
Okay, great. So go ahead and stick your nose in that glass and breathe in gently through your mouth. What are you guys getting on this Añejo Maestro Dovel? I'm definitely getting more of that, like, kind of
get maple
wood,
syrup, yeah.
Kind of like a little bit of, like, nutmeg.
Maple pancakes.
Yeah.
Brandon, what are you getting?
Maple.
Maple?
Yeah.
Toasted chestnuts.
Yeah, there is like a little bit of like that, like, I was going to say, I stopped myself before I said nut oil, but I'm already going to say it.
Luis,
too late.
What are you getting, brother?
Like cherry skin?
Oh, that's a good
yeah,
one.
That same kind of like oiliness for sure, yeah.
I feel like spice caramel.
All spice?
What are you guys getting as you tap it over your tongue?
Baking spices.
I actually get a lot of vanilla on the palate, actually, more than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Whereas the Blanco, when it touched the palate, it actually was a bit more dry than I was expecting. This, I'm actually getting more sweetness.
It reminds me of sticking, like, my finger in, like, raw, like, carrot cake batter. Like, because it's got, like, the cinnamon, like, the vanilla in there and stuff like that. Yeah.
And all this
mm-hmm.
sugars and
yeah,
spices.
Yeah, the texture on this, for sure, it's a little bit more, it's pricklier. It's a little bit spicier than some of the other stuff we have that we've tried before this. Like, everything else has been really smooth, but this does have a little bit of heat to it, for sure.
I like this one a lot. I used to work with whiskey, like I told you guys right before I joined this, the brand. And I feel like this is comparable almost to an extra Añejo. Because the heavy char on the American virgin oak ends up giving you a lot of barrel caramels and all of that. This is something for someone that really likes an aged tequila. And even though on the nose and the front it might seem sweet, I feel like it finishes dry enough for you to keep on drinking it.
Yeah, definitely. Be nice in an old fashioned.
It really is.
Yeah.
Very lovely.
Yeah. A little bit of citrus, a little bit of bitters. Yeah.
What you said about this being a whiskey drinker's tequila really resonates with me because I drink a lot of whiskey and like on first taste, like if you had told me this was a whiskey, like you probably could have convinced me.
There you go. You're going to try to pinpoint where is this herbaceousness coming from, but you still wouldn't doubt it that much. Yeah. And I've been there. I've been, you know, sipping on it and like, what is this whiskey I'm drinking? Like, oh, wait a second. It's my Añejo. It makes a lovely
you
Manhattan.
You told me, like, yes, tequila, I'd have been like, no, it's not. No way, that is not.
Seaway.
I've been surprised.
Seaway, it's tequila. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. So, like, if I wanted to get a bottle of this Añejo for my home bar, how much would that run me, Vinny?
You're looking at 59 for this one.
Still great.
And goes up to 55, maybe 60. I've seen some skyrocket prices in some random liquor stores, but I feel like those are standard prices.
Yeah, it really just depends from region to region. And if you don't see Maestro Dovel on your shelves at your local liquor store, ask your mom and pop shops to order it in. They are totally cool with that. If you ask them, they will order it. And if they don't sell it to you, they'll sell it to someone else. So, you know, keep that demand high for them. You know, let's
yeah, we appreciate it.
Go ahead and ask your local liquor store to get some Maestro Dovel in.
They will definitely bring it in for you.
You got it, guys. So Andrew just passed out the fourth mark. So what is this fourth mark right
so
here?
So now we're stepping into the innovative aspect of our production processes.
The experimental line, if you will.
The experimental line, if you will. Things are starting to get a little more interesting. But basically, this tequila, if you look at it, it has a clear color. But it's actually an aged tequila that was filtered down back to a clear color.
Mm. So how did you do that?
Well, we use activated charcoal filtration.
Okay.
We got these big old tons that we just soak the tequila in it, and then we draw it from the bottom. And they have real small pores. They call it high volume, small pores, activated charcoal. And basically, a lot of these micro bits of particles stay in the charcoal after you soak the tequila in it. The color, for example, goes with it. I feel like a lot of the caramels goes with it as well. I feel like the vanilla little bits of particles stay, and I still get a lot of it. But basically, what you're doing is you're adding another level of complexity to the tequila, and at the same time, you're making it further delicate. So I would say that this tequila is very delicate, but yeah, complex.
So for you listeners at home, when we're talking about activated charcoal does not impart any kind of flavor. Think of it as a Brita filter in your fridge. That's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to mellow it out, if you will. So go ahead and stick your nose in that glass and breathe in gently through your mouth. What are you guys getting on this? What is this one called? The Diamante?
The Diamante.
Diamante. Diamante.
This is definitely the most peppery on the nose for me.
I'm getting that funk again now, which I'm a really big fan of.
Very, very smoky smell.
Smoky smell?
Smoky smell.
So see, you get the smokiness from the charred barrel.
Funk, a little bit of like ocean, salt water.
Some solidity
yeah,
to
sure.
it.
Big brininess on that.
Yeah.
It's like floral as well, much more floral than the last one.
So you're telling me that this is the Blanco that's been aged and then filtered?
So you're actually looking at a blend of three different ages.
Okay.
It's 50% six-month-old tequila.
Okay. That's been filtered with
50%
activated charcoal.
50% six-month-old tequila, 40% 18-month-old tequila, and then a 10% three-year minimum old tequila. So there's some extra añejo in it.
Interesting.
And one other important note for you to make on this one is that instead of American virgin oaks, we use Hungarian virgin oak for this one.
So
it'll be drier,
so
works better with it.
Okay.
For some reason, they felt like that worked. We do have single barrel Diamantes. They're aged only in American virgin oak, available for people to purchase mm-hmm. if they want to, you know, sign up for the program. But we decided that the Hungarian oak worked better as far as balance with the whole process, including the filtration and everything.
So how is your process of doing it? Do you age it first, then do charcoal filtration, or do you charcoal filtration, then age it? No. In order to extract it, you have to do it afterwards,
you
got to
do it after.
Okay.
So you age it first, and then you blend them together, the different ages. Then you soak them in the...
Interesting. So you blend it before you put it through the filtration process. Very, very interesting.
Blend them
so
all.
Go ahead and tap some over your tongue. What are you guys getting off of this? Diamante.
Much more botanical, almost gin-like.
And yeah.
Not as much bite and wood as like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely cleaner, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm getting like sugar cookies and mint leaves.
Sugar cookie. So this, I would say this one would be the most friendly expression that we have. It has a lot of complexity to it, but it doesn't have that much of a bite or that people like calling.
Yeah, I get baking spices for sure. Like at the end of the palate, but it's very smooth. It's viscous, almost like syrup. It's not.
I agree.
It's not hot. You know, it's not abrasive. It's very, very, very smooth.
So, what's the name of your master tequilero is it a master blender that you're working with, or who's at the helm of this distillery?
His name is Alejandro Huerta.
Alejandro Huerta.
And he's the one that oversees the cooperations together with Rafael. That I forgot his last name. But Alejandro and Rafael are the ones that oversee the whole operation.
Okay.
And they work under Juan Domingo Beckman, which is the creator of the brand. Juan Domingo Beckman, and he's got a nickname, Leturga.
Leturga?
Yeah, that actually composes the name of the brand, Dobel, Domingo Beckman Leturga.
Oh,
so
Dobel,
it's named after him.
So it's like a little anagram.
Yeah.
Cool. And he got Rafael and Alejandro to work together with him.
The code breakers out there.
to come up with something different. And these guys were really thinking like, because this one filter expression of our tequila was the first one that we released. And these guys basically got the model from rum makers back in the Spanish colonies in the Caribbean. They do the Platino style of rum, which is a rum that's been aged for a minimum 2 months and then filtered back to a clear color. We observed that these guys were doing that, and we were like, well, what if we put that to tequila and try it out? And they really liked it. It was very approachable for people that wanted to get into tequila because it went through so many processes and stripped down the herbaceousness of all of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was the first one that we made. We released our lineage of Blanco Reposado and Añejo a little bit after. And it's already a little bit different as well, the virgin barrels and everything.
Mm-hmm. You got a question over here, Andrew?
As Stephanie can probably attest, we taste a lot of tequila doing this podcast. And the thing that strikes me the most about this particular line is how varied each individual one is. Is that something you guys intentionalize? Is that a marketing tactic you guys have? Why did you decide to do that?
Our company is very much so about innovation. And they really wanted to like be able to tap into different spirits make, you know, kind of like, how can I say, you know, challenging a little bit the status quo.
Experiment. I mean,
yeah, experiment.
There's just so many different variations of what you can do with spirits of all kind. And I mean, like, you can definitely, I mean, your process as a master distiller or someone who like it runs a distillery can get a little stagnant if you guys are just repeating the same processes over and over again. And you can kind of see it across the board with like the boom of American craft distilleries. They're applying some like really crazy new like innovative stuff. So I mean, it only makes sense for tequila to kind of be able to do that same thing as well, just because I feel like agave as a spirit doesn't have too much variation because it's so terroir driven, you know, whereas whiskey, there is like at least 5 different things that end up ultimately affecting the flavor of that distillate, you know, water source, barrel, fermentation, terroir, and like there's just so many different variations. So I mean, I can see why you would want to start experimenting with tequila and like have that charcoal filtration and see what it does, because why not, you know?
And it's cool to see what processes that they choose to implement in a way where like you say, guys, just so you know, the charcoal filtration is not going to affect the flavor. Mm-hmm. So these guys are really paying attention to how can we make a tequila that is sweeter without adding anything to it, mm-hmm. without tempering with the natural process that we're trying to use. Well, what if you use a virgin barrel instead of second fill barrel?
Yeah.
What if you cut the agave piña closer to its core? What if you use only real ripe agaves? So they start experimenting with that. And if you look at our company, Proximo, which runs Master of the Bell, we are very much so about innovation. We are the first American single malt company in America. We do Stranahan single malts, which is a different kind of whiskey. Single malts normally come from Scotland, Ireland,
yeah.
Japan. So
Stranahan's in Colorado. Beautiful, beautiful
Colorado.
Stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
So, interesting question on that note, just when you were done explaining right now, Vinny. So my question is to you right now. With a lot of tequila makers, what they'll do is when the tequila comes off of the still, they'll add water to bring it down to proof. And a lot of places will add water from their natural well or from other places from another well. So my question to you is, what water do you guys use if you guys have to use it to bring it down to proof?
We use Manantial water, which I believe it's spring water.
Spring water?
That's what it's called.
And is that coming from?
From tequila, ran in the volcanic soil.
Got it. So it's coming from the actual lake of tequila. You guys are getting it. Awesome.
Great. So what's this last mark that you passed around, Andrew? I think it's the...
This is the most innovative expression that we have, and we kept it to the end because it has smokiness to it.
Ooh, okay.
You guys like smokiness?
Smoked silver tequila.
So it's a smoked silver tequila. Ooh. Humito means little smoke in Spanish.
Yes, humito, homo.
Okay. And basically, this tequila, the way that it's made, 5% of the agave piñas that goes into this tequila were cooked over the fire in a ground pit. Not the cone-shaped ground pit that we normally use for mezcal making, but a rectangular ground pit, I actually saw it. They had in the facility. They decided to put it back to use, but it isn't big enough to produce a 100% smoked tequila.
So they're only using a portion of those smoked agaves
only
for this?
Only 5%.
Only 5%. So that's where the humo is coming from.
That's where the humo is coming from. So you can see how much a hint of smokiness is going to, you know, impact the flavor of this tequila. The other 95% of the piñas in this were steam cooked in the clay oven, just like our regular blanco. So basically, the roasted piñas with the steam piñas get put together and crushed together and then fermented in the still. So the rest of the process is pretty much the same. Uh-huh. They're just getting this 5% by volume.
Just getting a little variation there.
Yeah.
Go ahead and stick your nose in that glass and breathe in gently through your mouth. What are you guys getting on this humito, Maestro Dovel?
I like it.
I'm getting that cheesiness again, which I love.
The cheesy stack.
Honestly, it smells like burnt or smoked jalapenos to me.
It's good. I mean, it reminds me of like in Nicaragua, where I'm from, there's not
guys,
a lot of refrigeration on the farms. And it's just like you have to smoke your cheese to be able to hold on to it longer, you know. It's really salty, super smoky, and
tacos?
It just like has to be that way. I think Jay's hungry. He said tacos.
I'm getting like Cinnabons on this.
Cinnabons?
Yeah.
Snake's meat.
Snakes meat.
Snakes meat. Wow, okay. Look at that.
That's a good reference.
Brandon's rugged.
I've had it,
and I can tell. I agree with you.
Now go ahead and tap some of your
savory
tongue and see how that experience changes for you guys.
On the tongue, it's like you're getting a lot of menthol.
Yeah. Menthol? Interesting.
Menthol.
This one's kind of throwing me through a loop here. I'm not quite sure.
Savory notes after like God in a saddle has been cooked over mesquite wood.
That's exactly what it's cooked over, man.
It's cooked over mesquite wood?
Yes, it is.
It's kind of like, now that you say carne asada, it reminds me of, after you eat the carne asada and you have like all the black bits on your fingers that you lick off, that's what I'm getting.
The full-on caramelized meat.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stop thinking about that carne asada, though.
It does remind me
so
of like...
So true now.
It's had a savory taste, almost like chips or...
Like tortilla, like a little bit of corn, like burnt corn?
Not barbecue chips, maybe something like... I don't know. The savoriness to it that is paired with it. You see how much complexity a 5% roasted piñas of agave can add to a tequila, right?
Do you think you'll ever experiment with doing a higher percentage of smoked agaves? Or is that something that's maybe being talked about? Or do you know what the future of this experimental kind of line of Maestro de Bell will be?
I haven't had that conversation, but funny enough, we started at 3%.
Okay, so they're already
experimenting
with 5. Okay, that's
good.
And
I wonder if this is going to be one of those situations where the product changes with the market.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's a bigger demand for something like this, then yeah, I can absolutely see that pattern growing, you know, and that percentage going up a little bit higher. And
I feel like what is important to... The one thing about tequila and agave spirits that really brought me closer to it is when you start looking at the behind processes of... the tequila, the spirits making, you start seeing that there's people behind it, you know? That there are people like us, and they think about it in all these different ways, and they have different phases of their lives that translates into the tequila. I feel like because these plants grow for so long, you get a lot of terroir in these spirits, you know? Spirits, they get fermented and then distilled. So if you grow a cob of corn for a season and then you turn into whiskey, you didn't really spend that much time in its terroir.
Yeah.
The agave plant is there for years.
Yeah, absolutely.
These guys are looking at them and taking care of them. All these different people with different lives and different backgrounds, they're all in contact with this plant, with the whole process. And then by the time it comes to your hand, it not only has terroir, it has a background to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just like that agave. It's like it's a desert plant, you know. The only thing it's sucking its nutrients from is the earth itself. So it's the best representation of the land that it could possibly be. I mean, and that's how I come to found to respect agave spirits so much, because it's so land driven and it's a clear representation of the land and the people who the people who work on it. So if I wanted to get a bottle, I think I might have skipped the price on the Diamante and the Humito, but what's the price on both of these if I wanted to get it at my local liquor store?
Great question.
Well, I think I actually gave the wrong price for the Añejo. The Añejo is $69.
Okay.
And then the Diamante is $59.
Okay.
Oh, so the Diamante
is a little bit more inexpensive.
Diamante is cheaper.
It's great. Cheaper, even
and
though
the
it goes through. And then the Humito is $45. Price similar to our Reposado.
Okay.
We have a suggested minimum price for our retailer. So $39 would be for the silver.
Okay.
$49 is the bare minimum you can do
for the Reposado?
For the Reposado. And then, no, actually $42 is the bare minimum for that one. $49 would be the bare minimum for the Diamante, but normally it's at $59. And then the Añejo has a $55 minimum kind of that we suggest to people. We want to kind of stay on that range, make sure that, you know.
Yeah. Andrew, you have a question over here?
So this smoked silver tequila, in my palate, shares a lot of similarity with mezcal. What makes it different from mezcal? Why are you calling it tequila when it shares so many of those flavor similarities?
There's three main differences between tequila and mezcal that I like pointing out. The first one is the species of agave. Tequila, by law, has to be made out of the blue Ebro agave. When mezcal, on the other hand, can be made out of any species of agave. So you can pick it, small, big, as far as it's an agave plant, it's fine. The second difference is the production process. So this is not necessarily regulated by law. So you could make your mezcal in a very industrialized way if you wanted to, and you still call it mezcal, as far as it comes from the regulated regions that mezcals are allowed to be made at. Which brings me to the third difference between mezcal and tequila, which is the region. So there's 8 different states that you can make a mezcal in and 5 different states that you can make tequila. The only one that overlaps is Michoacán. It's the one state in Mexico that you can make tequila, make mezcal, and label as tequila or mezcal. And the production process, which is the second biggest difference that I mentioned between tequila and mezcal, is what really makes mezcal what it is. The main difference would be the fact that you are cooking the heart of the agave plant over the fire versus cooking it in an enclosed oven like tequila does, which gets steam cooked. So agave, mezcal makers normally cook the agave piñas into the in this cone-shaped ground pit.
An earthen oven.
Yeah.
Earthen oven.
Earthen oven.
Some different producers will even line volcanic rock underneath so it doesn't touch the soil.
That's right.
And maintain smokiness as well.
And so this smoke is going right through the piña, and if, after you crush it, ferment it, and distill, the smokiness still stays with it. In the case of the tequila, the cooking process is in this enclosed oven, and, the agave piñas are getting steam cooked, so they don't come in contact with the smoke at all. This one replicated, not replicated, it's actually from back in the day. This one ground pit that we have in the tequila facility in Jalisco, in tequila, it's very similar to a mezcal pit. It's not in a cone shape, it's rectangular, but it's a ground pit. It's cooked over the mesquite wood, which is the wood that they use for cooking the mezcal piñas as well. I feel like sometimes they use oak as well, but mesquite is definitely the number one use. And that's why it brings you to a mezcal kind of thing. Why can't you call it mezcal? Because it's made in Jalisco.
And
that's the first reason.
Again.
You could make it the same way that you make it in Jalisco, in Oaxaca, and call it a mezcal if you want. But other mezcal makers would be like, well, man, that's not very traditional.
That's
you know?
Not traditional.
You shouldn't call it a mezcal, you know. Call it something else.
Cool.
So the main reason why they don't call it mezcal is because they don't want to. They want to market it as a super tequila. But even if they wanted to, they wouldn't be able to because it's made in Jalisco. So, but it will bring you the mezcal aspect to it because 5% of it is cooked like a mezcal is.
Yeah.
The other big difference between, I feel like the three biggest differences between mezcal making and tequila making is the fact that you roast the piñas over the fire, the fact that you crush them with tahona stone, you start picking up those flavors from
exactly.
the stone, and the fact that you ferment it in wooden tun, open vat fermentation
yeah.
tuns. But most mezcals are also double distilled by copper pots, which is what Dobel is distilled like as well. Most mezcal makers have a little clay still in their facility,
yeah, they do.
Which they can yield a small amount of, not that much volume of mezcal. That's why they.
If it's artisanal, yeah.
But they always have that available as well for you guys. The Olla de Barro, love it.
Awesome. So you said, I'm sorry, I guess we didn't even touch on this. So your stills, you have a copper pot stills?
Copper pot stills. So everything is double distilled in copper
double
pots.
Distilled.
And it was clay oven, copper pot stills, right?
Clay oven, no, there's no clay ovens in any of these.
And oh, really?
I was just saying that the mezcal makers, they always have a little clay still in their haciendas that they sometimes, they always make clay pot still mezcal as well. But copper pot's the most commonly used. The one single fermentation does not distill it enough. The liquid is pretty harsh when it comes out. Two fermentations is normally the sweet spot. Most spirits maker all across the world do a double copper pot fermentation.
And distillation.
Distillation, my bad. And that's what we do as well.
Awesome. Does anybody have any more questions for Vinny before we wrap up here? All right. Well, thank you so much, man. This was really, really, really beautiful stuff.
Thank you guys for having me. It's an immense pleasure to be able to be here.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like what you heard, please head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and review. The Spirit Guide Society is a Spirit Adventures production in association with Bitten from the Apple Productions. Special thanks to Tone Mesa for their post-production and audio services. The show is produced by Andrew Apple and me, Pedro Shanahan. Executive producer, Andrew Abrahamson. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Spirit Guide SOC. We'll be there to answer any questions you have, share what we're drinking, and more. And if you're still thirsty, you can always find more episodes of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to always drink responsibly. That means don't drink to forget, drink to remember.